The hosts feel it would be a little unkind to present this podcast without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now's your chance to. Well, we've warned you.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Frankencast. I'm the mad scientist, Anthony Bowman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by...
the little guy squatting on your chest, that is Eric Velasquez. My pronouns are also he, him.
I knew you were going to have to talk about that little creep.
You know I am.
Yeah, so we're talking Gothic, the entirely untrue story of how Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess it could be true, right? Because I should we say spoiler alert to this? Because we don't know if anything actually fucking happened in this movie. There's a lot of imagery, but that's as far as we go.
Yeah, it's... so, well, you know, I guess a week or two ago we talked about Chicano Frankenstein, and I mentioned that I'm not a fan of dream sequences. This movie...
I hate to tell you.
Yeah, depending on... some of this movie is a dream sequence. Maybe all of this movie is a dream sequence.
Well, there's a section that's not. That's the beginning and the end.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, it's... this movie is a weird mess.
This is like the British Houseu, right? Have you ever seen Houseu?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, it kind of is. Yeah, and it's... like, not only, like, even if you take the dream sequence stuff for what it is, still not a lot happens. It's a lot of just people running around and screaming and stuff without, like,
it's
anything.
It's a vibe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, it is 100% vibes, you know, almost no plot. But if you want kind of, like, a vaguely spooky, vaguely sexy, kind of trashy movie from the... from the you know, late 80s, early 90s, or whatever. Yes. Yeah, this definitely will meet your needs as far as that goes.
Right. Oh, so amazing. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, are there any trigger warnings, really? There's blood. There's creepy critters.
There's a lot about baby death. Some weird...
there is dead babies, yeah.
Yeah, there's, like, some various, like... they look like alien autopsy things. They don't really look like babies, but they are, you know, supposed to be dead babies or whatever.
Odd fetuses, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And there's maybe some implications of sexual assault, but never really anything, like, explicit as far as that goes.
Right, it's all about the implication. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But also, we got a surprising number of Harry Potter alumni, if you care.
True, yeah.
We've got a young Timothy Stoll, what was his name? Anyway, he's the rat guy.
Peter Pettigrew, right? Something like that?
Yeah, Peter Pettigrew, yeah, exactly, 100%. And then we've get Malfoy's dad. I'm not even going to give him the honorific of Lucian.
Yeah.
Yep. And then famous Mr. Death himself / Devil, Gabriel Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a big fan of Ghost Ship.
Yeah, yeah, as Lord Byron, Lord Byron himself.
Yeah, Lord Byron.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess I should admit, state that Julian Sands is Shelley, Natasha Richardson being Mary, Miriam Sear is Claire, but, like, there's not much.
Yeah.
Like, she's done a few things. I don't think anyone will know. As a matter of fact, actually, she was in a TV series going up until 2020, so
okay.
I guess she's still in business, but nothing like, oh, she was in Frankenstein Unbound. Did you know that?
Oh, interesting. Okay. That's one that we haven't gotten to yet, but is definitely on our list.
So we'll see more of her again.
I guess so.
Interesting. All right, but yeah, so that's the main cast. Mm-hmm. Then other than that, we've just got random servants who don't even get real names.
Yeah, and they're only in, like, you know, little scenes here and there. There's that one weird butler that we see a little bit more than everyone else, but still not much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's a very, small cast, really, as far as primaries.
Yeah, and also I think basically you'll see every female character's breasts. And a couple guy characters, almost dongs. I don't think Timothy Spall gets pretty close there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so
I mean,
if you want to see Peter Pettigrew's dog, this is your movie.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, like, it is a vibe movie. It's very, like, it's sexy, question mark? Like, you know, if...
Yes. it's sexy adjacent. How about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Depending what you're into.
I would say it's sexual more than sexy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'll go with that. It's definitely horny for sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Everybody's horny for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Everybody. Yep.
Everybody. All right, so let's get this party started, I guess. We're going to start off with what I call classical synth pop, in that it starts kind of classical music, but synth pop is added in there for whatever reason.
Yeah.
We've got a skull that we slowly zoom in Halloween style.
Yeah, like over the whole credit, it's just black background, and it's just getting closer and closer through the whole credits. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, when the credits end, it's, you know, it's really big on the screen, and then we cut to some tourists who are looking through a telescope across the lake, and we've got a tour guide talking about, over there you can see the infamous Villa Diodati, the home of the rebel poet, right, Lord Byron.
But this is like ye olde tourists, like people that are in that era.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're wearing the outfits.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, but it's some amount of time has passed because it's the former home of Lord Byron. Right. So, you know, I don't know, 5 years after the events of the Year Without a Summer or whatever.
Right. And then one of the tour guides is looking through a glass, and he's like, look over there to the right to one of the ladies, and Timothy Spall is in the window.
Yeah. And, you know, it just kind of, like, leads into us seeing the you know, what the events. I feel like the implication is either we're flashing back to what happened, and the tour guide is telling us the story, or, you know, the woman's seeing, like, a ghostly figure because of all the weird stuff that happened.
The ghosts of Polidori,
yeah,
maybe.
But yeah, so there we see Byron and Polidori. They're talking. Byron's like, "Oh, look, there's some unexpected visitors approaching from across the lake." And
we've got Shelley, Mary, and Claire on a boat.
Yeah, and it's like a little rowboat, and Claire, like, instantly, Claire is just insufferable. Like, this is a little ass rowboat, and she's trying to do like the "I'm the king of the world" thing on the front of the boat. And, you know, like, she's just being so, like, over the top, and, you know, they get to shore, and, like,
you know, you can tell who's done the most coke in this movie by their position in the boat. Right? Because it's like the Claire clearly out of her gourd.
Mm-hmm.
Julian Sands is like in the middle. He's kind of vibing, right?
Yeah.
He's a little off kilter already. And then you've got Natasha Richardson in the back being Mary, who's like, I'm already fed up with this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just like
nearly enough
reading in the back of the boat. Yeah, when they get to shore, instantly a bunch of groupies like come running out of the woods and try to like
poet groupies.
Yeah, they're trying to like attack Percy. So he goes running, and it's like this little mini Beatlemania of these two girls chasing him around the grounds.
Right. But we get an almost Scooby-Doo, like, gag, because they chase him through the grounds, and then dogs start chasing them to the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Byron, I guess, was, like, kind of famous for having, like, a bunch of hunting hounds. And, yeah, so they're chasing these girls, and they're trying to climb over the wall. Meanwhile, like, Claire is, I guess, trying to, like, dock the boat, but she's mostly just, like, fallen out of the boat and is splashing around in the water while Mary is, like, you know, just kind of rolling her eyes at all of this. But
yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, eventually we get them kind of all on the doorstep trying to get in. And
well, first it's Percy and Claire, and they steal a little kiss.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, oh, this is scandalous, but not really, because They're all into free love.
Yeah. And it's like starting to rain and they're kind of like joking about the girls that were chasing Percy. Mary doesn't like them. And, you know, Percy's like, well, you know, I'm a famous poet. Like, what can you say? And Claire's like, no, yeah. Mary doesn't like them because they don't know what you see in Mary. Like, the groupies are, you know, this is the same thing that happens even now with like boy bands where like, you know, female fans like hate the guys' girlfriends and stuff, you know, like, and so, you know, Mary is kind of like jealous or whatever that they don't like her. The group is all kind of led inside by that, the butler that we were talking about, this kind of, he's kind of got a more like classical look. Like he's got like a big powdered wig and everything. He looks sort of clownish.
It looks like he stepped out of the American Revolution, mm-hmm. right? And this is several years after that.
Yeah, he's got a lot of makeup and everything. Like he's just kind of cartoonish. He brings them inside, and then Byron is like up on the landing above them, and is like reciting poetry.
Well, Percy's talking about how the storm is like the end of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Byron comes in. You can already tell how fucking insufferable this character is going to be, because he's like, so let us live in love so that the world can say that the devil as well as God is an Englishman. What?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if this is a quote from an actual, I'm not super familiar with Byron stuff. I know there's like an old saying that God is an Englishman. So I'm guessing like,
yeah.
You know, Byron wants, you know, to be so controversial that the devil will also be known that way. But yeah, I mean, he's just constantly quoting poetry at people,
right.
Because
he's that guy.
Yeah. Like he's, you know, the acoustic guitar at the party guy before mm-hmm. that was a thing. But like, you know, Claire is just head over heels for him. And Byron's, I mean, he's constantly like a dick to her, which most versions of this story, we see that.
Right. Scan.
Yeah. Yeah. But then so everybody's like going up the stairs and Mary goes down a hallway and there's just like a goat in the hall and she gets like really scared. And Byron's like, oh yeah, you know, I can't travel anywhere without my menagerie. So he's just, you know, being Byron, but like it sort of sets the precedent that like Mary in this version is like a coward. Like everything scares
her.
She's
a little jumpy.
We'll get to where everybody's kind of like, it seems, you know, like you said earlier, it seems like everybody's kind of on a drug trip and they're all a little easily freaked out, but Mary especially so.
Right, yeah. She got a little hit and then she got paranoid, right?
Yeah, seems that way.
But speaking about people playing the party and being insufferable, Claire starts playing the guitar and singing about being dead in the grass growing on her grave.
Yeah.
Man, this is fucking 1800s, like, goth shit, right?
And it's like, she's singing, it seems like the song she's singing is, like, from the perspective of, like, a dead baby or something, mm-hmm. which is super fucked up because we know that Mary has just recently lost a baby.
Right.
So, you know,
that's basically saying, like, hey, fuck you, sis.
Yeah. Not the most kind song to be singing around somebody mourning. And clearly, like, Mary is, like, she just looks miserable throughout the, like, most of the party scene. She's just kind of sitting quiet in the corner, unhappily.
Mm-hmm. Right. She doesn't want to be there.
But at this point, I think Byron introduces everyone to Polidori. And as we see in, you know, most versions of this story, Byron is also kind of a dick to Polidori.
Right. I think he's a dick to most of the people he fucks, which...
yeah.
That scans, right, I guess?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And the next thing I think we see is just the group kind of sitting down to dinner. We cut away to a shot of, a fish flopping in, like, an empty bird bath. And, like, if you hadn't got the vibe yet, as soon as you see that, it's like, okay, this movie is going to be weird.
It's got its head up its own ass a little bit, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, but also, can you tell me, like, so they have this dinner scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this big discussion, and apparently Byron carries around vinegar for the aesthetic?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And, like... Percy's like, oh, I thought you just had that so you could mock the crucifixion. Right?
Right.
It's like, what the fuck? What's going on here?
Yeah.
That vinegar is not on a sponge, so I don't know.
Yeah, right. I don't know what the... Yeah.
Right.
And, Yeah, so mostly, yeah, they are. They're talking about how they're all atheists and that they're kind of like, you know, mocking God constantly. And they're also sort of talking about death. You know, they're you know, as the title might indicate, these people are very gothic. They're into discussing dark and morbid topics. You know,
Byron. These are the most self-absorbed goths you can imagine.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And there's a point where, like, Byron, you know, he's talking about, like, moving here to Geneva, and he starts kind of insulting the Genevese people.
Calls it swinish.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, the only people who are worse are the English. That's why I had to leave there to come here. And Claire's like, you know, I'm from Geneva. And he's like, I know that you're just as bad as everyone else. Like, and she kind of, she calls him a devil for insulting her, but crawls under the table and is like kissing his legs or feet or something.
I don't know if she's kissing or biting him, but she like says, "Let me see your cloven hooves." Also, though, can we talk about when he just randomly grabs her face while she's eating spaghetti or pasta?
Yeah.
And a big ball of pasta goes bloop out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything in this movie is very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
And yeah, like, yeah, so, you know, she's like pulling at his boots and then he like kicks her face. And like drags her out from under the table and like calls her a bitch.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so definitely assault for sure.
But it's, the thing is, like, I feel like especially Byron, but a lot of the people in this movie are constantly sort of like threatening each other that they're going to like hurt or kill each other, but they never do.
But they don't.
Yeah. Like, cause he kind of like,
there's a lot of vacillating, right?
Yes. It almost looks like he's going to like push her into the fireplace, but she like doesn't seem scared. Like, this is just like, oh, this is the fun game that we play together.
This is our kinky thing, because they start making out immediately after.
Mm-hmm. And she like gets away from him and starts running, and he chases after her, and then everybody gets up and starts, it just becomes this sort of like flirty game of tag as everyone's running around the house.
Right, but Polidori's not about it. He's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah,
you all do your thing, I'm gonna chill. And Byron's like, nope, you're in my house, baby, you're playing my games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and this is another one where it's just, there's like tension there that's like, it's a little sexual, it's a little violent, you know. Yeah. And,
yeah, doesn't he grab Polidori's junk?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, like, I feel like, you know, I know
that's an aggressive maneuver for sure.
Yeah. And I know, like, in, you know, a lot of the specifics of everything that happened, you know, at the Villa Diodati is, you know, it's kind of unclear. We know that they were all sort of exploring free love. There's implications that Byron and Shelley had a thing, and that, you know, Shelley was also, you know, had a thing obviously with Mary and also with Claire. I wasn't,
and so did Byron and Claire.
Yeah And I don't feel like I've heard a lot about Polidori being involved in anything sexual with any of them necessarily, but you know, it's possible. This one definitely implies that, like, Polidori and Byron have something that they're, like, there's a little bit of, like, self-hating gay to Polidori in this version.
Well, Mary even calls that out near the end.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a point where Polidori does as well that I think we'll get to shortly. But, yeah, there's definitely tension there where, like, Polidori is kind of into Byron, but he's not sure that he wants to be. It's kind of dark, but, like, I mean, I guess for the time is maybe not, you know, not unheard of. Once, you know, they kind of have their sort of, like, encounter, Byron runs off, and this sort of, like, elaborate game of tag kind of, everybody, it's an excuse for everybody to be separated around the house and see weird stuff. Right. So we get, like,
fucking, yeah, Mary with a boa on a boa constrictor on a, or a python on a fucking suit of armor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, so there's our devil imagery again, I guess.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we see, like, Byron is, like, running around howling like a wolf. We see one of the...
Claire also does... She also goes around yelling like a crazy person.
Yeah. And then we see, like, a servant milking a goat in the kitchen.
She gets really into milking that goat. Like, I think that's her thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another excuse for, like, a weird sort of taboo eroticism, you know, of, like, when we saw the goat earlier, it was clear that it was, like, a, you know, a very, like, engorged goat. And yeah, like, it's, they're playing with like that sort of sexual imagery that is also just like a very mundane thing at the same time. Percy ends up in like a room where there's like this weird, at first it looks like it's a mannequin, but I think it's like some sort of automaton or something.
Right. Yeah. It's a mechanical, an automaton basically, but it's a lady who just starts shaking her robotic junk at Percy.
Yeah, she's like,
okay, what's his fucking reaction? You see this just odd, it's a marvel technically, you know, it's obviously something novel. Mm-hmm. And is your reaction to, hey, let me grab it by the, you know what? I mean,
yeah, because
he's pulling a Trump here.
Yeah, it's like topless and has like big fake breasts, you know, like that's like looks like it's made of like ceramic or you know something like that. It's kind of dressed like a belly dancer or something, but he like you said, he tries to like pull down the you know veil or whatever, covering its junk.
I do like how she's like, no, that, we don't do that here. Yeah. This is not the strip club for that, good sir.
Yeah, she just kind of like pushes him away and then starts kind of like thrusting in his face. It's very bizarre. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Polidori is like praying in his room, which kind of, you know, further sort of emphasizes that he's sort of, you know, dealing with complicated emotions about what's going on here and his interest in what's going on.
Right. And I think in a way that they're trying to show that God has rejected Polidori is that whenever he goes to touch the crucifix that's on the wall, mm-hmm. it like cuts him.
Yeah.
And then he does the sign of the cross. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, we're going to have that discussion, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go there.
And then we see Mary's kind of like running scared, you know, since she saw the snake or whatever. And she ends up in like, you know, a room where like that's not being used. So all the furniture is covered with white sheets and she's kind of trying mm-hmm. to hide. And we see this like ominous masked figure sneaking up behind her. And as it gets close, pulls the mask off and it's just Byron.
Byron, yeah.
And he kind of...
And he's like, I gotcha.
Yeah. And
but then Claire just shoots up right beside... She was the chair, I guess.
Yeah, she's been hiding in her room.
What the fuck? You know what the point of that was? Me too. All right, anyway.
Yeah, it like, again, it's just like everything about this movie, none of it needs to make sense. There's not really much of a plot. It's just about weird imagery. I mean, that scene really spells it out. Because, like, clearly Claire wouldn't just be, like, hiding silently in this room. But it makes for a
doing a perfect impression of a fucking chair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then we see that, like, so, you know, these three have kind of reconvened or whatever, and they look out a window and see Percy naked on the roof.
Butthole naked.
And there's, like, a lightning storm, and he's, like, yelling at the lightning, and they're like, you know, get inside. You could be struck or whatever. And
it's the fundamental force of the universe.
Yeah, and he ends up basically, he's sort of, like, ranting crazy, but, like, he quotes, like, whole lines from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Well, he doesn't say, I could be the modern Prometheus,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is like, boo.
Yeah.
Don't give him that credit.
Yeah, like, it, you know, it feels like a lot of this, if you take that the whole thing is a dream that Mary Shelley is having, which there is a read of the ending of this that could imply that, but if you take it as any of this actually happened, then this movie is sort of implying that Percy gave Mary most of the ideas she used to write the novel, which I hate that as an idea. Like,
yeah,
I
know. It's bad.
That's... As we go, there are points where it's like, maybe this is when the dream starts, but, you know, like we said, this whole thing could be a dream, and in that case, it could be argued that Mary's imagining this and working out her process through all of these, you know, sort of Wizard of Oz style, you know, interpretations right. of the people she knows.
Either that or Byron just dosed everybody with LSD.
Yeah.
As soon as they came in.
Yeah, but there's just something about using, like having Percy be the mouthpiece for a lot of the actual lines of the, you know, of the novel that doesn't sit right with me.
Right, exactly. And Polidori's examining Percy, and he's like, he just spouts some random bullshit. That's Percy's whole thing. He spouts random bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this could be an age of dreams and nightmares. It's like, okay, cool. Vibes again.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into them being like, well, you know, we live in this age of nightmares. Let's explore them. And that's when Byron gets down his copy of the Phantasmagoria. So here's a little bit of definite reality that we know happened. And they kind of take turns reading it. And
it's like one story about a ghost that goes after a kid.
Yeah.
They
take turns reading from this, and we get like clips, like little sort of movie clips of the story they're telling, you know, as if this is like a Are You Afraid of the Dark episode or something.
Right.
And
of course, Mary's the one reading about the dead child, mm-hmm. or the child that the ghost is going after.
Yeah, and that part is kind of cool because we see like a child in a bed, and there's like this, you know, ghostly figure that actually kind of looks like a knight. It's like wearing armor or something, and it's approaching the bed. But Mary is in the dream watching this happen, and she's terrified. You know, I mean, she just lost a baby, and she's seeing this baby about to be attacked. But
so that hits home, right?
Yeah.
And then of course they reveal the ghost quote unquote face. It's just a bunch of leeches.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course they scream. Apparently Paul Dory decided, hey, let's put some fucking leeches in a random dish.
Yeah, it like takes us out of the story. Byron has like lifted up, you know, a dome over a plate, and yeah, it's full of leeches. And Paul Dory thinks it's very funny. Everyone else, especially Byron, is pretty upset by this. Which, you know, seems, you know, in this movie, everybody's sort of like unkind to everyone else. You know, I feel like most versions of this story that I have heard, you know, like whoever's interpreting, you know, this historical event, Polidori seems to be like a relatively good guy who's sort of abused by Byron. But in this version, he's also kind of twisted himself.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel like Polidori, like, maybe he was, you know, maybe he was Byron's lover, who knows. But I feel like he was trying to be a professional, mm-hmm. while everyone else was like, hey, let's do drugs about it.
Yeah.
But not only that, but then we get Claire's read on the same situation, and the fucking ghost has a giant metal dick. I mean, it's a codpiece, but still, it's a very pronounced codpiece.
Yeah, it is a very erect codpiece, and now Claire is in the dream in the same way that Mary was. And she's excited. She's ready to get fucked by this weird metal dick.
Hell yeah! Yeah. She's ready to go.
And then that's...
Percy looks like he's nutting or something as he's trying to wash off his face.
Yeah, and he gets kind of freaked out, and everyone's like, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, I just had this vision of a woman with eyes in place
of her
breasts. Yeah, which this is one of those canonical things. We do know Percy claims to have this vision. It comes up a lot in, you know, retellings of this story. And it will come up a lot in this telling of the story, particularly. But yeah, so he like, I think he goes kind of like rushing out of the room. Claire is like, I was hoping for this dark ghost story, and this has a happy ending. That's dumb. Let's just make up a story of our own. Like, this is.
I swear to God, these are my high school goth friends.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah, we want to be spooky, and everyone's like, okay, yeah, we can do that.
Well, yeah, and then I believe Byron's like, well, I mean, let's do something better then. If we don't like happy endings, let's make our own ghost stories, right? We'll make a competition about it.
Yeah. And, you know, we see this moment where, like, Byron and Polidori kind of, there's, like, tension there as they're kind of, like, talking to each other.
Well, Polidori literally spells it out, right? He's like, yeah, I think I'll write mine about this blood-sucking leech of a nobleman who just, like, drains everyone around him.
Yeah, yeah. And then we cut to a scene that, like, I feel like, you know, I mean, it's definitely, like, gratuitous, but it also is interesting because we talk a lot about that there, you know, there were these relationships, there was this free love or whatever, but, like, people are kind of precious about all of these, you know, historical figures, and we don't really, like, see it on screen. But now we have this scene where, like, Polidori is sort of, like, he's sitting on a couch watching as the other four are kind of having, like, a foursome.
It's a tame foursome, though. I mean, let's be honest. Like, Claire's filleting Byron. I don't remember what Byron's doing with probably Percy, and then Percy and Mary are going at it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it, you know, there's everybody's sort of partnered up with the person that they're sort of normally partnered up with, and then just being watched by Polidori or whatever. But, you know, obviously this is a pretty kinky scene to be, like, depicted of these, like, you know, sort of famous historical figures or whatever, and probably is, you know, more or less accurate. Like, things like this probably happened. And
just remember, everyone's mom is a hoe at some point, right?
Yeah.
So don't be too precious about it.
Exactly.
But yeah, then they have like a vision of a burning tree, and it scares everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so they all look out the window, and you know, this is the scene from Frankenstein,
so utterly destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. And so again, it's something. I think Percy says something similar, at least. So again, he's sort of being the mouthpiece for what ultimately becomes, you know, words from the book.
Right. And then we get kind of the crux of the movie, where Byron says, you know, if maybe Percy, you think lightning could possibly restore life, but what if our thoughts could cause things to come into existence as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the sort of that he has this skull, that, you know, like an actual human skull or whatever, and they decide to kind of have this seance. But yeah, there's this idea that, like, it is, you know, of course, the idea is, it's a lot about creation and the idea of creativity being a version of physically creating something. You know, it's kind of like the tulpa idea that, you know, you see a lot in, like, versions of, like, supernatural stories, that we can, like, imagine a thing and make it real, and that, like, you know, that possibly this is where cryptids come from and aliens and etc. But like, here they all kind of like gather around this skull and sort of have like a seance kind of thing where they're like bringing.
But I like how Mary is basically announces herself as the final girl in a movie where no one dies. Spoiler alert, I guess. But like, she's freaking out. She's like, "Nah, this is dumb. Let's not do this."
Yeah. So she like leaves the room.
Goes to Polidori, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. He goes to, like, kind of comfort her, and she's like, you know, I'm afraid. I don't like this kind of morbid stuff. And I'm
especially since her baby passed away.
Yeah. And she's like, you know, I'm afraid of a lot of things. You know, I am afraid of death, but I'm also afraid that, like, Percy is not going to stay with me. I feel like I carry too many tragedies, and he's got enough to deal with on his own, and you know, if I'm not easy to be with, he may not want to stay with me.
She's way too generous to Percy, honestly, because he's just like, I'm fucking everything that moves anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah. But she does admit, you know, I lost this child, and I had this dream that the child came back to life, which is another thing that we've heard in various you know, interpretations of the story. And she's like, I'd give anything for that to be true.
Anything.
Yeah. So obviously a little ominousness there, especially in terms of us just having a seance and in terms of what we, you know, what we know that she will ultimately create.
So then we get to the seance, the summoning, ghost summoning scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mary and Polidori have returned. I think, you know, Polidori kind of calmed her down, and maybe she thinks that, you know, maybe this is a gateway into bringing my baby back.
Right.
And
Claire kind of gets possessed a little bit.
Yeah. She kind of is sort of like acting like a medium. And she's, you know, kind of just, as you often see in these things, she's sort of ranting nonsense. I feel like at various points, you know, it's just like, you know, a couple minutes or whatever. But like, she says things that sound like she could be Mary's dead baby. But she also says things that could mean she's, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft, you know, Mary Shelley's mother. Or possibly both, and that they're both talking through her simultaneously or whatever.
Right. All I know is when she says, "Daddy, stop hurting me," I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Don't like that.
Yeah. But ultimately she ends up collapsing to the floor, foaming at the mouth. And, you know, of course, Polidori being the doctor of the group, he like runs to help her. And
Lord Byron seems a little pleased. He's like, "Hey, that was pretty cool."
Yeah. And then we cut to, like, you know, a few minutes later, Percy and Polidori have gotten Claire upstairs. They're tucking her into bed. we get like a quick little shot of Claire in the mirror looking kind of creepy.
Yeah, as they leave, the one mirror falls down, and yeah, we see the image of ghostly Claire in a mirror when she should be laying down.
Yeah, again, just vibes. Like, I you know, vibes. I don't know what else to interpret from that other than that this is all a dream, or that it's just a spooky thing to be spooky.
Yep.
But then downstairs, Mary is talking to Byron while all that's going on, and she's like, oh yeah, this kind of stuff happens a lot. Claire just, you know,
sees ghosts.
Yeah, she sees ghosts, stuff falls off the walls around her. It sounds like she has, like, you know, like telekinetic poltergeist type powers or whatever. And yeah, Mary's just acting like she's totally normal.
What did she say about, like, she knew about the puppy sucking some milk?
Yeah, I've never heard of this as a concept, whether within this story or just in general. She says that after her mother died, because, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft died a few days after giving birth to Mary. And she says that they brought in dogs to drain her dead mother of milk, which I don't know why you would need to do that. Like, I don't know if that's just a
vibes, man. So we're going vibe. Cause like, if you, why? Yeah. Like you said, why?
Yeah. If they're just going to like embalm her, dehydrate her. Yeah. It doesn't.
Yeah. You got to get all the moisture out, I guess.
Yeah. Mary, the reason she brings it up is she's like, I knew that this happened, but no one else should have. And Claire has apparently mentioned it in one of her, you know, medium moments or whatever. And how else could she have known unless it really was my mother talking through her?
Right.
So then I think the next thing we see is just Percy and Mary going to bed. Downstairs, Byron and Polidori continue to kind of flirt in a...
aggressively.
Yeah.
But Polidori does apologize for the leeches. He's like, that was irresponsible.
Yeah. And Polidori's like playing something on, like, they have like a harpsichord. And Byron is like anointing his head with oil. In this, you know, it felt like another sort of like religious biblical imagery kind of thing. And, you know, that seems to be Polidori's thing. And kind of, it was rubbing off on Byron in these moments when they're together.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you got Polidori wrapped around Byron's legs. It's very suggestive.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but then, hey, Polidori goes running off happy as a something. I don't know what.
Yeah. Since Byron's alone and just can't possibly be alone, he goes to his room and he calls for the servant, Justine.
And, there's a reference.
Yeah, and Justine gets undressed, and then Byron...
Well, let's talk about... Hold on, before she gets in there, but he's, like, already oogling the mask of Augusta, right?
Yeah. And then he takes the mask off the wall as she's getting undressed and puts the mask on Justine and then starts calling her Augusta as he starts kind of, like, you know, kissing her or whatever.
Right. Now, is Augusta his sister or his wife? I don't remember that off the top of my head.
Yeah, she is his sister.
Yeah. Because there will be a quote where Mary calls him out for banging his sister, which, if this is accurate, sure, why not?
Yeah, very well could be accurate.
And
it definitely seems like, whether or not he did with his actual sister... He wanted to, so he's creating these scenarios where he can play it out at least.
By the way, I feel bad for Justine because she's like, I've had to do this fucking 3 times this week. You know, it's just very mechanical for her.
Right, yeah. And then we cut away from them back to Mary and Percy. Mary's not able to sleep, and she's like, I'm really worried about Claire. I think she's too into Byron.
And Percy is literally just doodling a big pair of breasts like they were a mountain and a bunch of eyes around it. Yeah. So guess what we're going to see at some point, folks?
Yep. And, you know, Percy's like, well, this is part of the deal. You know, Claire and Byron are like us. They practice free love. You know, there's no reason to get involved. Just let them do their thing. And, you know, Mary's like, you know, I don't think Byron cares about her the way that she cares about him. So whether it's free love or not, I think she's going to end up getting hurt.
Very accurate from everything we've seen.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then we go to Polidori's room to see what he's up to, which is
just a fucking anatomical dummy just chilling on his couch.
Yeah, yeah.
In flagrante.
Yeah, real. It's, you know, it's like the muscles and everything. And Polidori seems to be getting really drunk and talking to bugs. Mm-hmm. He's just got a.
They're my little friends. Yeah. It's more leeches, is what it is.
Yeah.
Isn't he fucking. Okay.
It felt a little Renfield-ish, you know, like.
Yes.
Yeah, it, like. Which, you know,
there's a lot of weird references to, I mean, because of the vampire, but there's also, it feels like there's a lot of references to Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Despite Bram Stoker not being anywhere fucking around here.
Right, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. It you know, I mean, obviously we're telling this one specific story, but the title is Gothic, and it seems like it's just about the idea of Gothic fiction in general in some ways, or at least is like making reference to a lot of like when they pull out the Phantasmagoria, I think they make reference to some of like the, you know, the famous early you know, Gothic novels like The Monk and stuff like that. But yeah, like him just kind of like hunched over these leeches and like, you know, there's just blood, and it's just, yeah, it's definitely very Dracula-ish.
Well, speaking of Renfield, though, at the very end, he just fucking slugs the vial of leeches.
Yeah.
He just tilts it.
Yep.
And I feel like that's going to introduce some nasty parasites into your body. And as a doctor, he should know better, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then we cut to out in the hallway. Mary is just kind of walking around. I guess she's still having trouble sleeping. She sees a couple servants like peeking through a keyhole into.
They're getting a free show about with Justine and,
yeah,
and Byron.
Yeah. And then there's like a commotion in the room and the servants run off, and then Byron bursts out like
he's chasing him off.
Yeah.
Like, you motherfuckers.
Yeah. So he kind of scares them away, and, you know, Mary sees all this play out, but she goes back upstairs to go to bed, but she's like getting in bed with Claire, not Percy.
Right.
And there's just like a book in bed next to Claire that she starts flipping through, and it's like
a lot of pornographic pages.
Yeah, it's almost like a Kama Sutra kind of thing. It's just like a lot of like erotic, like woodcut kind of images.
But we also get drawings of Byron, but it's not Byron from now. It's like Byron from like almost 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, it's just written like LB below it, but yeah, it doesn't look like this Byron here, and it also, like, the shape of the head and everything kind of has like a flat top to it. I mean, it's the hair, but like it definitely has an appearance like a Karloff style Frankenstein.
Right.
And, you know, like, I think, you know, Mary sees it and is like, you know, okay, like, yeah, Claire is definitely really in love with Byron, or the idea of Lord Byron, at least.
Right.
And she...
And we get that wonderful dream sequence.
Yeah, she looks up at the wall, and again, this is she sees that... Is the painting just called... Is it called The Nightmare or something like that?
Yes.
It's like a famous painting that often comes up in variations of this story, where there's just like a nude woman laying in bed with like an incubus on her chest, like a little gremlin guy.
I mean, that's also... That's also an actual experience that a lot of people have if you have, like, sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. But, yeah, Mary sees the painting and is a little creeped out by it, and then falls asleep. And like you said, we get this nightmare where she experiences the painting. She's the woman, and we get this
creep. We get a little dude chilling on her chest.
Yeah, just this nasty little creepy guy. It obviously scares her. But then it's like... I think in the dream, the guy turns into Claire, and she wakes up screaming, and then, you know, Claire's
on her.
Yeah, Claire's there next to her.
Draped over.
Yeah, and you know, Percy, like, runs to her and starts comforting her. And then, like, Claire wakes up from all the commotion. And
right, there's thunder, lightning, very, very frightening.
Yeah. And Claire's, like, she takes Mary's hand and puts it on her stomach. You know, obviously indicating she's pregnant, and she's like, yes, he's the father, implying Byron.
Right.
So while that's going on, Percy has gone downstairs. He goes out into the barn, and is just kind of...
With its flapping door. Just because, like, why would you do that in this that day and age, just go out into the fucking storm?
Right.
I feel like it's like, no, just there's no animals out there. There's no responsibility he has to anything out there. Mm-hmm. Just fucking stay in the house.
Yeah, it, I mean, like you kind of referenced earlier, like there's a lot about this movie that feels like a slasher movie, except no one actually gets murdered. Like this right. just seems like the idiot who wanders off and is definitely going to run into Jason in the barn, you know?
Right.
But instead,
it's like a decision you would make in a dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? Instead of a killer being out there, he just, well, first he sees like more of those like automaton mannequin kind of figures that we
chilling in a carriage.
Yeah. And they kind of like freak him out a little bit. And then he has like a vision of some sort of creature approaching him.
Well, no, he just walks past it. He just walks past it, and there's like a little vampire demon thing, like it's half bat, half werewolf. I don't even fucking know, but it's just chilling in the carriage.
Yeah,
it's just having a fun time.
Yeah,
but yeah, then he sees whatever the fuck that other thing is that scares the shit out of him.
Yeah, and so then he goes running from the barn screaming, and then a little later, Byron finds Percy huddled up on the floor, all, you know, creeped out from this vision.
Boy, if you thought Percy was pretentious and just spouting off bullshit before, he just goes full in.
Yeah. Yeah. He says something about like, I smell the grave, like the scent of the grave is upon me.
Right. I'll suffer a trance like death and be buried alive.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, man. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And Byron.
You're just having a bad trip.
Yeah. Sleep. Yeah. Byron kind of tries to calm him down and he's like, I think you're spending too much time around the women. I think it's making you crazy. Yeah. And he's
like, estrogen by osmosis, buddy.
Yeah. And he's like, don't, you know, us poets, we're just for each other. Don't waste your words on them.
Right.
And,
you know, and Mary sees this and she's like, you motherfucker.
Right. Yeah.
As he's kissing Percy's neck, once again, implying the vampirism aspect.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, like, a little later, we see Byron in the billiards room, and Mary approaches him there, and she confronts him about the way he's treating Claire, rather than that, you know, what she just saw with Percy.
Do you love her, or do you plan to leave her, basically?
Yeah, and she's like, do you know that she's carrying your child? And Byron's like, oh,
well, Polidori knows how to. Yeah, Polidori knows how to take care of it.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, that kind of upsets Mary,
right? Because she lost a child,
mm-hmm.
and he's just casually like, "Eh, we'll just flush it down the drain or whatever we got to do with it."
You know? Yeah. And Byron's like, you know, I know that, you know, you share Percy with Claire, and that you're jealous about that, like. You know, he kind of implies like you think this is going to be your baby too, and it's not.
Right. But what if it's, yeah, he even suggests, what if it's Percy's baby mm-hmm. and he's going to replace you with her now that he has that link?
Yeah. And, you know, so again, this is another scene where there's just like this weird sort of violent, but also sexual tension. He ends up like, he slaps her and then starts kind of like tearing at her dress.
Well, she slaps him first and then he just decks her right back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's not a not a respectful gentleman.
No, not at all. This Byron. But yeah, he kind of pulls at her at like the top of her dress and it tears a little bit. Mm-hmm. But like he doesn't do anything beyond that. Like, I mean, it, obviously right. that's not okay. But like it kind of looks like it's going to be something much worse that it doesn't end up being, thankfully.
Right. And like another bunch of just random images. Just random moments. Mary runs off. Byron goes after her. He gets angry, runs down in the basement for whatever fucking reason, sees a pig head on the floor, and then it turns into Polidori's bald head.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And so it seems, I mean, like, this feels very much like he is experiencing some kind of, like, bad drug trip at this point. He ends up, like, in a dungeon sort of area. He's, like, kind of scared. Meanwhile,
drinking just a bottle of wine or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he sees goo, just random goo by the gate. And he's like, let me go touch that shit. What the fuck?
Right.
Get out of here, man.
Yeah. There's a couple scenes with random goo that I feel like is supposed to be like ectoplasm, which was like a big thing at that time that like ghosts left this slime behind or whatever. But it's never really spelled out. There's also, I mean, it also definitely looks like just semen, which feels like a part of this, you know, the the horny vibe of this movie as well.
Well, that makes sense why he touched it then.
Right. But while he's doing all this, Mary has gone upstairs and Percy is in the bathtub. And it's
right,
just,
his arm's just sticking out of it. So she's like, oh shit, he's drowned himself.
Yeah, but no, it's just he's submerging himself in cold water to stay awake because he doesn't want to go to sleep because he's afraid he's going to have more dark visions in his dreams.
Yep.
And he says something about, like, you know, things used to be simple. I remember when it was just the three of us in a small room. It was, everything was so good then. And then the baby died and now everything has kind of, like, fallen apart since then.
Right, yeah.
And then we get... I feel like this is one, like, sort of a centerpiece of the movie. We get a scene where, like, Byron is having sex with Claire. She kind of seems right. like she's drugged or asleep, which isn't great.
But what the fuck is Polidori doing? He's, like, very upset that they're having sex.
Yeah, I think he's like, their rooms he's are next jealous. To each other, so he's hearing it, and he's feeling jealousy or whatever. But there's a, as you mentioned earlier, there's a crucifix above his bed. He takes the crucifix mm-hmm. off the wall. And, like, there's a nail jutting out of the wall that the crucifix was hanging on, and he just starts slapping the wall over
slapping
and over again, just impaling.
Slapping the nail on the wall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, which, obviously, if you've got a crucifix and then a person bleeding from their hand, there's definitely, like, stigmata. Kind of stuff there. Yeah. But, yeah, there's just blood going everywhere as he's, like, slapping the wall over and over again.
Right, and then to reiterate the vampire image, Byron has apparently been doing something to Claire where blood's around his mouth.
Yeah, well, like, at some point he pulls like a veil over her face, so we can't see her, but there's like blood coming through the veil, and then like puts his mouth to her neck, and then there's blood dripping down his face. Obviously the idea of Byron being a vampire is a popular sort of reference that, possibly Polidori in real life actually was right. Making that comparison with his, the vampire story. But
right. It seems like you'd have to be pretty dense not to get that, right?
Yeah.
Or you just have to be Lord Byron with your head up your own ass.
Yeah. But obviously here it's made a lot more literal, assuming that this is happening, or it's either literal or like very on the nose metaphorical. So it's, everything's really chaotic and crazy. And then the next scene, everybody's just kind of asleep. The house is quiet, right. but kind of spooky.
Now, also, though, real quick, I know that a lot during this period, a lot of guys wore corsets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like Polidori is almost a crossdresser to a degree.
We'll definitely get scenes later where he is even wearing lipstick, which was not a thing at this time. Or,
right. That was a few years before that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So it's definitely implied that Polidori, like, and again, when you have people who are experiencing, same sex attraction and not knowing what to do with it, especially if they're like feeling, complicated religious guilt.
Religious trauma.
Yeah. It seems like Polidori is trying to figure out, like, maybe I'm a woman. Maybe that's what's happening. I feel like in this case, in his mind at least, it would almost be better to be a woman attracted to a transgender woman attracted to a man
right.
than a same-sex attracted man.
Yeah. That's an interest. I don't know exactly how to feel about it because, like, at this point, he's bald, right? And that's a stereotypical masculine thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then also there's the feminine aspect of Polidori.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing. Is it the cross-dressing or is it, like you were saying, trans?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, there's definitely, I guess as far as, like, cross-dressing goes, you often do see, like, drag queens will often be bald men because it's easier to put on your various, elaborate wigs for drag
right.
performances. So,
right.
I mean, obviously this movie is the kind of thing where it's like, it's kind of throwing a lot of stuff at the wall and just seeing what
right.
sticks. So,
and once again, vibes based.
Absolutely.
So who knows?
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that there was a specific, intention here. It's just kind of like
right.
letting you sort of stew in this weird, mess of ideas and vibes and just kind of seeing what hits you. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of complicated gender and sexuality stuff going on,
especially
with
Polydor. Around
Polydor. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, something comes in and it gets him. Well, it seems like it got him.
Yeah, yeah. Like, comes to him, and then, like, we cut away to Percy, who has now also found some slime on the ground in their room.
Freaking the fuck out. He's like, why does the slime look so much like the trail of a slug?
Yeah.
Okay. And, sure, man. That's a way to put it.
Right. And weirdly, like, you know, as we've been saying, Mary in this story has been sort of a coward. Everything freaks her out. But here she's just like, it's probably rainwater. And Percy's like, yeah. This is not rainwater. This is slime. This is thick. And she's like, it's probably, you know, it's rainwater that went through the gutter and picked up some, you know, algae or whatever. She's just trying to do anything to kind of, like, go to bed, basically. Like, let's not worry about this.
Right. Then they do, like, apologies, Anthony, but this is the whitest shit I've ever seen in a movie. Because, like, they hear something going on upstairs, and fucking Percy's like, I've got to go see what's up there. There may be a bird. I've got to help it. No, motherfucker, you go the fuck to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, you lock the door.
You close your door. Yeah, exactly.
And then they hear, like, some laughter that's, like, female, so, you know, they assume it's Claire, since she's the only other woman in the house. And again, Percy gets up to go after her, and Mary's like, it's always Claire. You always go after Claire. And Percy's like, you're the one who drags her around with us all the time. Like, she's your sister. Like, she wouldn't be here if it was up to me. Like, you keep making the choice to have her around. If you don't want her around, don't bring her.
Bring her, yeah. But she's like, well, you think Byron is more precious than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So she's like, she feels insecure, but she's like pointing it at everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's making her feel insecure.
And that seems to, you know, that seems to be kind of a running interpretation of things, that Mary was maybe not as into the free love thing as everyone else around her.
Right.
I don't know if people just like to use, it's clear from, like, a lot of Mary's writings from the time that she did have other relationships and did after, you know, Percy died and everything. But I think she was definitely more monogamous than the rest of them.
Right. Well, like, her mom and dad, like, both into the free love, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't technically married, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so it feels like that was a thing, and they were kind of like, yeah, you should do this too.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'll do that too. Even though she didn't really enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. I think she's got, the Mary Shelley movie we watched, I think, is probably a little, definitely more accurate than this. But, you know, she talks a lot about that, like, she believes in free love as an idea, but that it may not work for her, right. Which is obviously a valid interpretation of things. And yeah, it seems kind of like that's the case here, that it's like the price of admission for her is that, like, I love Percy, and if Percy needs this, then I'm going to just deal with my feelings about it and let him have what he wants, but just so that I can continue to be with him.
Right. Yeah. That sucks, but it's a thing.
Yeah.
But so Percy just decides, fuck this shit, and starts running off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he says, I think there's something dangerous outside, and I need to make sure Claire's safe.
Right. Which that can't help. That can't help her feelings.
Yeah.
Mary's, that is.
And yeah. And so she gets
blood dripped on her.
Yeah, she goes to, like, follow him, but, like, when she goes out in the hall, he's gone. And she looks up the, you know, it's like one of those, like, open stairwell kind of things. She looks up, and, yeah, blood drips down on her face, and it's Polidori, leaning over a balcony above her, just dripping blood from his face. And then I think we just, like, it's like a little bit later, everybody's all gathered together. Polidori's kind of getting cleaned up. He's alive, but injured.
Right, and he even spells out that he felt like a vampire was draining his blood.
Mm-hmm. And Byron is like, I don't believe in such things. Like, you know, you're a doctor. You should know better than that. There's no such thing as vampires. But everybody else is like, there is something weird. Like, I've seen a weird dude out the window. There's some weird shit happening here tonight, whether it's a vampire or just a bad guy. Something's going on, and we should look into it.
Right. Well, and Byron even says, listen, this is bullshit. Polidori obviously inflicted the wound on himself. Look what he did to his own hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he injured himself, so clearly there's something going on here. And who is it who brings up the idea that, oh, what, during the seance we didn't summon anything, we created it with our minds?
Yeah, because I think Byron, like, as he's sort of saying that Polidori did this, he says something like, we are the creators. You've created this idea of a vampire, and you've injured yourself to make it feel real. And Claire's like, no, I think when we did the seance, we did make something for real. We're the creators. We created this monster. Percy jumps in. He's kind of like, Percy just kind of continues to be more insane as it goes on. Just kind of like, at this point, just ranting. He's not really saying anything coherent.
It's a jigsaw of our worst fears. And then he just talks about breasts with eyes.
Yeah.
But
it's definitely a lot of references to, you know, Mary's novel again. Like, he's just saying either direct quotes from the novel or referring to things that occur in there. Polidori is, like, still kind of arguing with Byron. And this is where Byron kind of spells it out, and he's like, I think that you love me and that you hate the fact that you do. I think you're scared of it. You're scared of your urges. You're scared of your own dick.
You're scared of your own homosexuality.
Yeah. And Polidori's like, no, I'm scared of God, which I feel like could be argued. They're saying the same thing in different ways.
Right. Religious trauma is a hell of a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we cut to Percy, who, like, is in
holds a gun.
Yeah, and he's in the billiard room, and Claire is laying across the pool table naked.
Yeah, oh yeah, this is the scene.
Yeah, she sits up and she's like, "Look into my eyes," and like we get a close up of her.
Your eyes are closed. What are you talking about? She's like, "No, sweetheart, my eyes." Yeah, and guess what?
Yeah, it's
we
like
got there, folks.
It's like my eyes are down here, basically. Yeah, we see that she has eyes for nipples, and they like open and like blink and stuff.
But you know, if you think about it, this is like a brilliant bit because there's the joke about no, my eyes are up here. Her eyes are down here. Literally staring at her boobs.
Yep, it's really good.
Genius. No.
And yeah, so he runs out, scared that his vision has come true.
Okay, folks, strap in your seats because we've gone off the fucking rails at this point.
Yeah, there's basically whatever plot there has been so far, there's pretty much no more plot the rest of the movie. And again, like you said, it really feels like a slasher movie, and it feels like Mary is the final girl. Everyone's just kind of running around the house seeing scary shit. And you know, it's like we see Mary running around. She you know, opens a door and sees Polidori like convulsing in bed. She hears Byron's voice kind of like laughing and mocking her just in the ether. She just like runs through a wall of the greenhouse, just like glass shatters everywhere.
It's through the door. It's a glass door. Like somebody drops an anatomical dummy at her. And she just bursts through the glass door.
Yeah.
And then we get Claire taunting Polidori with the same anatomical dummy.
Yeah.
She just drops it in front of him and starts giggling and runs up the stairs. Because, you know, she's possessed.
Right. And so at that point, Byron is starting to believe maybe we did really create something. And he's like, we've got to get together and do the seance again. And we have to destroy the monster that we created.
But Shelley has been reduced to a fucking babbling wreck. Because he's like, who knows where these things come from? Heaven, hell, the grave, or the stars?
Right.
You know, he's gone full Lovecraft protagonist.
Yeah. And then Polidori bursts in and he's like, this is all Percy. This is all of this is his fault. I kill him, it'll fix everything. And Byron's like, you can't kill him. You've tried to kill yourself and you can't even do that right.
Right. Tried to drink acid a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Polidori's like, no, don't make fun of me. And he pulls the pistol, aims it at Shelley, pulls the trigger, and click.
Yeah. And
then it's a funny scene. Yeah. It's honestly funny.
Yeah, and everybody just starts laughing at him, which obviously is...
pisses him off.
Yeah, so they just all start kind of like fighting.
Yeah, Shelley and Byron just start kicking the shit out of Polidori.
Right. Yeah. and he eventually kind of like gets away from them, runs out into the yard, tries to hang himself from a tree and fails at that.
Well, that's because a fucking demon saves him. Like, it knocks him off the fucking horse, but apparently it untied him as well, and he just rides off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then we have the whole group again. They're all sitting around trying to calm down, and they're like, they're talking about, like, we created a monster through our thoughts. We made, you know, we made something real, and now we have to... I think Mary gets a little philosophical here and is, you know, says, like God, we have created, and perhaps God, like us, wants to destroy his creation before they can destroy him.
I do like Percy's retort with, but God is dead. And she's like, but we raise the dead.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Right. That was a good exchange. It's like, we raise the dead God. Oh, no.
Yeah. And yeah. Then we get more...
So Claire decides to run down the stairs in reverse motion.
Right. Yeah, we just get a kind of extended scene of everybody just running around the house. It felt like a Scooby-Doo cartoon to me. Like, they're all just going in and out of various rooms. But ultimately, they all kind of reconvene in, like, a basement kind of dungeony area. Claire is naked now. She's covered in mud.
Covered in mud. Right. And then Percy's like, man, that's a great idea. Let's cover ourselves in mud. Yeah. She's already figured it out. Claire already knows what to do to get rid of the ghost or whatever spirit we summoned her.
Yeah. And then, like, while he's doing that, Mary's like, you know, Percy is a mad creator who made a deformed monster that didn't ask to be born. I don't know if it feels like a metaphor for their baby, possibly for Mary herself, that Percy has kind of, you know, changed her so much that he has created her
monster,
and then also, you know, the actual whatever monster that's roaming the halls of the villa.
Right. Doesn't she say, Byron, you're the devil? And he's like, I am the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, yeah, you're a devil who committed sodomy and incest.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we Percy and Claire and Byron are all kind of gathered around the skull. They're trying to undo what they have done. And Mary realizes that's not the solution. She grabs a big rock and just like knocks the skull out of their hands.
You got to break the skull, right?
Yeah.
That'll break the spell.
Yeah. She smashes the skull and then picks up a shard from the skull and tries to stab Byron with it. But Percy stops her.
Yeah, he jumps in front of it. He's like, no, don't hurt my boyfriend.
Yeah. So at that point, she goes running off and...
Well, the dudes start making out about it.
Right, so. Yeah. Yeah, which, like, you know, this, again, feels more like a slasher movie thing. It almost feels like the weird scene in The Shining, the, like, guy in the dog costume or whatever. Like, she sees them making out and is like, oh, no, and she runs away and then...
Right. Gay sex, it's so gross.
Yeah, she ends up, you know, seeing the goats again. She see like windows that burst open and like, you know, leaves come flying in the room and she gets scared of that.
She sees her the ghost boy in the foyer.
Mm-hmm.
Just chilling in the casket.
Yeah. And then she eventually gets to like, there's like a locked door and she hears a child calling through the door, calling mama, mama. And yeah, that, I think that's that she finally opens that door. Yes. That's where she sees the ghost child.
Then she gets stuck in a room of doors.
Yeah, like she's completely surrounded by doors. She goes through one and sees herself giving birth.
Right.
Basically,
goes through another.
This part, it's kind of hard to parse, but like basically it seems like all of these doors are various points throughout Mary's life. Some in the past, some in the future. And she just keeps going through doors and seeing all these visions.
Well, she also sees Polidori turning into a doll.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, he's like, he's naked, he seems dead, but then as she gets closer, like, he's like made of porcelain, and bugs crawl out of his mouth. But she sees, she sees like dead fetuses, which could be like, you know, the baby that she has already lost. Then she sees like a dead child, which, you know, we know later she will have a son who does die, when he's like, you know, a little older.
But we also see her as like an old goth in bed with a bunch of candles.
Mm-hmm. and we'll see Percy drowning, and then we'll see Percy's funeral where they, you know, they burned him on a pyre on the beach.
Let's talk about that, because they bury him first, and then they burn him.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's very dream logic.
Like, the burn thing definitely did really happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, but basically, she's seeing all these horrible things. Eventually, she ends up back in the house, and she tries to jump off the balcony, and, like, Percy stops her. And she's like, no, I saw the future. I saw so many terrible things. And if I die today, none of them will happen. I can stop it all. I can save you. I can prevent all of these babies from being born and dying, you know, abruptly and suddenly. Percy is just like, no, it was a nightmare. It was the storm. We're all just kind of
scared. The storm's over.
The storm's over. And she says, is it? In this kind of, like, incredulous way. Like, I think the storm is going to keep going until we die, basically.
Right. Well, we even get a thing there where she's like, we're all dead creature, we're all dead, and the creature is waiting in the shadows until it sees us to our full deaths.
Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, that's, I guess, sort of like the end, or, at, you know, Percy and Mary are in bed at that point where she says that, and then the next thing we see is she kind of like she shuffles out into the garden as if she's sort of in a daze. She's obviously had a really rough night.
Percy and Claire Claire are playing badminton.
Yeah,
they're Polidori and Byron are just chilling.
Yeah, everybody else is just like, you know, they're like, hey, good morning, what's up? And she's just like still very fucked up from everything that happened the night before. And you know, they're all eating breakfast, and Byron's like, oh, don't, I know you had a hard night, you'll get used to it, that's just Diodati nights get a little wild, but you know, you'll get the hang of it eventually,
right? Oh, I wouldn't want to get the hang of that.
Yeah. So she sits down next to Polidori, and he's like, so did you think about what you want your story to be? And he says like, I'm really partial to, I can't remember exactly what he says, some kind of like ghostly story. And she's like, no, my story is going to be about a mad creature who haunts its creator and all of the creator's family and friends, until they're all dead. That's sort of the last word, you know. Then we cut to present day, and this time it's real present day. We see people in modern clothes. And
modern for 1986.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're in like jeans and stuff, you know, it's not classics, you know, stuff from Shelley's time period, but we've got a tour guide, and he's like, and so that, you know, that's, you know, after the group left the villa, you know, a series of tragedies befell them, which this part is pretty much like historically accurate. He just lists all of the terrible things that happened after they left. Including all of the children that Mary lost, you know, Percy's premature
all of them
death,
died except for Mary and Claire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that Polidori committed suicide. That Byron died fairly young as well. I think Claire's child died the same year that Percy died. And, you know, and he's like, you know,
but Frankenstein was born here and still lives on. And then we get a shot of a dead baby. So.
Yeah, like, as he's saying, the you know, this one thing lives on all these years later, the camera just, like, goes under the water, and, yeah, there's just a dead baby floating around down in the water. And, again, the baby, like, I feel like the
it has, like, a flat head.
Yeah, it's supposed to look like a little baby Frankenstein, just drifting around in the water, and that's how the movie ends.
Yep, almost like a, well, going back to the slasher, Friday the 13th. Degree.
Yeah, you're Jason. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully that made some sense to you guys.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's the... it could be that everything that happened basically, like, it's pretty much like where at this... over the course of the night, where did it become Mary's dream and, you know, what actually happened?
My money is on that wine. Once they all imbibed that wine at the very beginning, it was like, all right, there was some shit in there.
Yeah. Like, obviously, you know, it's definitely just kind of playing with, like, this idea. You know, a lot of the sort of, like, you know, mythologized versions of the story of, you know, what happened with this group at the house. You know, even like the second edition of the novel where Mary wrote like a new introduction, she kind of talks about like having these, you know, nightmarish visions and everything. And this feels like a way to really sort of amp that up in a way that make, because I think like Mary describes it as like, you know, I was in bed and I saw like a scientist in the corner working on a dead body, and it made me, you know, gave me this idea. And then we have like this one little bit of Percy saying he saw, you know, breasts with eyes, but that's not really going to freak out people, you know, in the 80s. But if we just really like play with all this like blood imagery and religion and you know, these weird creatures in the darkness and all this, like it amps it all up, and it maybe gives us an idea of how weird and tense that time might have felt for these people in a simpler quote unquote time. But at the same time, it also feels like it's trying a little bit too hard to just be weird for weirdness's sake.
Weird's sake. Yeah. 100%.
Like,
woo.
This is definitely like, I don't hate this movie, but it's definitely not one of my favorites. You know, again,
nope.
Don't love the dream sequence thing, and this movie feels like mostly just a weird dream sequence.
Yeah. Basically, if you're doing light drugs, I would definitely stay away from hard drugs while watching this. Light drugs, you'll have a good time.
Yeah. I guess if we consider the idea that like this wine was drugged with something harder, and they're all having bad trips, you know, okay.
I think it's just Mary. I think she's the only one having the bad trip.
It could be. And that would explain why the next morning everyone else is just like, hey, good morning.
Hey,
and she's
up?
Like, whoa, what happened last night? But like, you know, I have had, I've had some trips in my day. I even had things that I would consider a bad trip, but nothing even remotely like this. It just, I don't know, like it, and I don't feel like drugs were necessarily a thing that were being used at this time, or at least, I mean, I guess maybe opium or laudanum, those were kind of things that might have been, you know, in the mix, but those wouldn't have,
LSD was not a thing just yet.
Yeah, and I don't know that, like, you know, psilocybin mushrooms were like a thing that, right. You know, those might have been a thing being used by like indigenous people in certain parts of the world, but not these, you know, rich white people in Europe, probably.
Right. Yeah. They're definitely not exporting peyote.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, yeah, it's like, again, I feel like this movie is worth putting on if you're just wanting like a weird vibes movie to kind of chill with your friends who are cool with, you know, horny nonsense.
Weird shit.
But outside of that, like it's not really a great movie to just sit around and watch by yourself. Like it's not, it's
no, don't try to get anything out of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
At all.
Yeah. you know, we did that so that you don't have to, but
have to. For sure. But is it as bad as Spanish Herbert West?
No, it's definitely got more going for it than that, but it's a similar kind of nonsense. It's in this case, I feel like it's leaning into the nonsense in a way where it's like it knows what it's doing, and I guess that's more is a better position than like something that is silly nonsense that's trying really hard.
Trying to be serious.
Yeah.
That's rough.
But yeah, definitely not one of our top entries. But yeah, like it's definitely an interesting curiosity at the least, I'll
absolutely
say.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of one of those movies you put on, you're like, you want to see some weird shit.
Right, yeah.
It's like, you know, maybe Halloween game nights or something like that, just to have it in the background.
Yeah, that would be like the prime way to do it, just like have it on in the background and, you know, maybe... Yeah. You got like those couple friends who don't want to play the games, and they're just sitting there having a couple drinks and listening to the conversation and also watching the TV, and they're just like, what the fuck is happening? Like,
there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else we got to say about this movie?
Yeah, I think that's it on this one.
All right. That's amazing. So, I mean, Anthony, we've watched something sexy, but let's watch something even sexier next week. Something with a little bit of lace and a little bit of steel. Or maybe steel and lace.
Yeah.
Got there.
Yeah, so this is another, like, I feel like we've recently done a couple movies that are sort of about, like, robotic women, and this is kind of along those lines, but this is kind of like a little bit more fun, you know, it's not like The Artifice Girl, it's a little,
no.
A little bit more playful and stuff, so yeah, it'll be fun to get to something that is silly, but, like, not as ridiculous as Gothic, something that has something to sink our teeth into, an actual story, so yeah.
Right.
Excited to check that out.
If you wanted to see a classical pianist get turned into a robot lady, then this is your movie.
Yeah. So definitely join us next week for that one.
All right. Where can they find us, Anthony?
Yeah. So you can find us on all the socials at the Frankencast. You can email us at thefrankencast@gmail.com. You can find us over on YouTube, and you can also find us at patreon.com/thefrankencast, where we're doing all kinds of weird stuff. We're almost done with the first season of The Munsters today. We've recently talked about the old Mario cartoon. Had a good time with that.
Oh, yeah.
Done some like a claymation special from the 80s. Just a lot of retro stuff going on over there these days, I guess.
We're living in our 80s era.
But yeah, we'd love to have you over there. You can check it out for free. There's like a trial period, and you can see if you like what we're doing over there. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, if there's nothing else to be said, to be continued.
Looks like you survived another episode. The Frankencast is a production of FCR Media. It's hosted by Anthony Bowman and Eric Velasquez. Follow us on Twitter at TheFrankencast or send us a letter at TheFrankencast@gmail.com. Our cover art is by Amanda Keller. You can find her at Keller Illustrations on Instagram. Our theme music is by Vivek Abhishek. Thanks for listening.